The Dead Pair Podcast is brought to you by Kohler Arms, America's competition shotgun, and is fueled by Fiocchi.
Paul?
Welcome to the Dead Pair Podcast, coming in hot with everything you want to hear about sporting clays. With your hosts, Jason Rambo.
You just didn't want my wife to edit something else you did.
And Sean Alley.
Gotta keep it PG-13, man. No.
Often imitated, but never duplicated. It's the Dead Pair Podcast.
The Dead Pair.
And now, it's showtime.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. What's up, Mr. Sean Alley?
Jason, doing good. How about yourself, man? You shot your first tournament down there in Florida. How'd that treat you?
Oh, real good. We'll talk about that here in just a quick second. I want to welcome Mr. Neil Chadwick to the show. What's up, Neil?
Good, guys. Thank you for having me once again. Appreciate everything that you two do for the industry and for new shooters. It seems to be going well. I hear that the 200th episode is coming up.
Yeah, Sean, you want to remind everybody about that, Sean?
Yeah, so what we've decided to do, we've bounced back and forth on all kinds of different ideas and scenarios, and what we're going to wind up doing is we're going to do a live scoops episode that's on February the 18th. You'll be able to hopefully join us, write in some questions while we're doing the scoops, or if you can't make it that night, feel free to email us with your questions. We'll make sure to get them asked on the episode. Any kind of questions you want to ask about me and Jason, doesn't necessarily have to be shooting related, could be personal life, business life, whatever. You know, we can maybe even tell some PG-13 stories on there, Jay. I don't
want to have to get my attorneys on the phone in order to answer questions, but we'll do the best we can with it.
So nothing where the statute of limitations hasn't ran out yet is what you're saying.
Yes, exactly. Okay. I think it's 7 years for Ohio, so we'll be good.
Fair enough.
But
can people join in live, Sean?
Yes.
Yeah, so they can join in live. It's just like doing like a team viewer or a Zoom meeting or something kind of like that. And they can actually type in questions in the message bar there, and we can definitely get them asked. So if you're, you know, if we got, you know, 100 people on there or whatever watching us, all those people can write in whatever questions they want within reason, and we'll get them answered.
I'm going to come up with some good questions for you.
Okay. Bring it. Come on.
I can shave off a few of those questions. Sean did it. It was his fault. Okay.
So right. Yeah. That'll be the popular answer.
Right. Sean, to answer your question, when we first came on, just came off the Blackjack Open at Blackjack Sporting Clays there in Sumterville, Florida. Great shoot, man. Doug Vine and Bruce Potter set the targets. Hats off to the staff at Blackjack, man. They worked really hard. The event ran smooth. No backups anywhere. No problems. I mean, everything we saw on our end was great. I shot with Malcolm Parker. Such a blessing to have him out shooting again. He kicked cancer in the butt and praying for him and so glad to see him out. And he's getting his strength back. You know what I mean? It's a little tough with all that radiation stuff. So very, very happy for him. Good to see him out shooting, but I shot consistent, whether it was bad or good. I shot consistent all weekend, so I ended up tying for the lead in prelim. Let me rephrase that. I tied for the win in AA in Super Sporting. I think I was third in prelim, and then I was like fourth in the main. So, but shot consistent all weekend. Really good targets, really challenging targets, but fair, you know. So it was a great event, and looking forward, we're going to be rolling. By the time people hear this, we're going to be rolling towards Jack Links.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of Jack Links, also a reminder to our listeners out there, we will not have a podcast release that week. So typically we would have one on Thursday, February the 13th. There will be no podcast that week, just as a heads up and a reminder to everybody.
Yeah, thanks, Sean. I appreciate you. I forget every once in a while. It's never happened to you. It happens to me, so.
Never. Why do you ask?
Yeah. What about you, Neil?
What did you say?
Right. So, Neil, we wanted to bring you on. You're a new sponsor of the show with Long Range, and I think it's a fascinating story. And the products you offer, you know, I sell them through Atlas. Atlas uses Long Range exclusively. And I wanted to kind of share your story a little bit. So, forgive me, I'm not being offensive when I ask this, but let's get in the way back wagon and go back. When did you start shooting sporting clays?
Oh, early 70s, 73, 74.
Yeah. And so people understand that was in Europe. So that, you know, it hadn't made it to the shores here in the United States yet. So you guys were already shooting sporting back then.
Yep. Yep. I mean, obviously we had the British Open has been running since the early 1900s, the English Open, same sort of time. Or I think the English Open may have started in 1923. Plus, you know, local shoots, regional shoots, state shoots, although they're called county shoots in the UK. So there was a lot, actually a lot to shoot mid 70s.
Gotcha. Go ahead, John.
Well, I was going to ask you. So, Neil, I mean, back in those days, of course, electronics weren't around. Everything was handset, right? You had a trapper that pulled all your birds and stuff back in those days.
Yeah. I think the most technical advance we made in those days was having a piece of wire out to a buzzer with still a trapper sitting there. So the referee would press a button that would set a buzzer off behind some barricade where the guy was sitting on a hand trapper, and the buzzer would go off and he'd release the target. That was the, I think, the essence of technology back then.
Sure. Oh, yeah, sure. Absolutely. Jason, I witnessed that in the early 90s when we started shooting with his dad. So,
well, you remember, Sean, if there was somebody sitting way out there, like Neil was saying, we didn't have the buzzer, but you and all three of us can attest to this. It used to be you would say trapper ready before you call pull. That was just the way that was part of the language. It wasn't just pull. It was trapper ready. Yep. Pull. Okay. Well, when they got way out there, you didn't even say trapper ready because they just heard you yell. So they would go ahead and throw the target.
Right.
So, you know, that was one of the first times I ever just said pull without asking trapper ready when they were sitting 50, 60 yards out on an incomer or something, you know?
So Neil, do you know when like the first electronic remote came into play with, and who brought that out? Do you know a little bit of the history on that?
Wow. Now you're stretching me. I know in the 80s, Laporte came out with a wireless remote. Okay. I remember seeing those just on Laporte machines, but very few and far between. That was about it, you know. Going back to the call-in, like you said, Jason, for the target. And a lot of people don't know it, but of course, when we shoot FITAS now, we call pull and the referee's standing there and he presses the button. Back then, each referee had a different whistle, buzzer, horn, some different device that you'd call ready. He would blow the horn or blow the whistle to signify to the trapper to release the target. Oh, okay. So, of course, all the referees had to have it. You couldn't have two with the same whistle. You know,
yeah.
And we've forgotten about that now. We just we don't use them because everything's sort of operated by the trap.
So while you were competing, Neil, because you, I mean, even when you got here in the United States, you were still pretty much competing in the early 90s, pretty hard and heavy. In fact, I just found a video. I put it up on our Facebook group page from the 1993 British Open. It was really cool. And you were in there competing. But while you were competing, is this when you saw the need for better electronics, or did that come about when you started designing courses?
Both, really. Both. It really started off, if we go back to the origins of long range, two guys, and I worked for IBM. I was laid off back in 89, 90 from IBM when they were laying off 300,000 people worldwide.
Yeah.
Down in Dallas, a company called Texas Instruments, huge company, they were in the similar boat and they were laying off their engineers at the same time. Two guys from Texas Instruments started a company called Long Range, making of all things automatic deer feeder. So that you could set off a deer feeder remotely, and of course the deer get accustomed to the spinner or whatever it might be, and so they would come in and you could shoot them. Now, I know that's illegal in some states, baiting the deer, but anyway, that's how they started. They then swapped over to making wireless releases for trap machines. At that time, their system, and you remember the CB days, that was a frequency called 27 megahertz. Telescoping antennas, remember the silver pull-out antennas?
Oh, yeah.
They used that. and they started at 27 megahertz, and the most machines that they could release at that time was 32. They then changed over and actually applied to the FCC for an allocated frequency, which they did. The CB antennas disappeared and so forth like that. So, but they could still only operate 32 machines. That was it, you know. So that was the beginning. Long range has been around since basically the late 80s, 89, 90.
Okay. So when did you become involved with them? When did you hook up with them and start?
Well, it's sort of the old classic story. During the 90s, I got people knew that I was into electronics and stuff like that. So I started getting a lot of the long range equipment back for repair. Well, some of it I could repair, change the buttons and so forth like that. But some of it was more in depth. And I would send it back down to the two guys in Dallas.
Okay.
And I kept getting more and more and sending a lot of it back to them. And it took forever to get it back. So people would phone me, have you got my remote ready? You know, the 500 series, there's still 500 series out there. So the guys down at Long Range said that these repairs would, you know, they'd get round to them when they could. So the two Texas Instruments guys had developed the pager that you used to pick up in restaurants and Panera Bread, that when they had a table ready for you, it would flash and vibrate in your hand. That was taking off so much that the remote controls that they were making, in essence, took a back seat. So it got close to the end of the 90s, and I said, okay, guys, sell me the company.
Really?
Yeah. So they went, oh. I said, yeah, I don't want the pager business. I'll just take the remote control business. So we worked out a deal back in 2000, and I managed to keep the name, the 800 number. I bought all their inventory, what they had. And started afresh because, you know, 32 machines was okay back in the 90s, but, well, it wasn't going to cut it as things grew. So I redesigned everything. We now do not use or utilize anything that the old long range had back in the 90s.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Well, Neil, let me ask you this because I want to make sure I'm totally clear on this. One of the things I was reading, everything about long range, even the electronics and the chips are manufactured here in the United States of America. Is that correct?
No, everything is manufactured from the board up. You would be very difficult to find all the chips that we use made in the US.
That's what I was wondering about.
Yeah, you get some of these little transistors, capacitors, resistors. They're not going to be made in the US. They're probably made in Taiwan or probably in China.
Sure.
But the everything that we use is sourced within the U.S. and the boards are built in the U.S. So, I'm confident in saying that, you know, it's American made. It's got American technology in it.
Okay. Well, and those small little transistors and stuff. I mean, yeah. Again, I understand, but it's probably very commonplace on small parts like that. But at least your board's manufactured here. I'm assuming you're constructing all the cases and the buttons and all that stuff. Is that all done here as well?
That's all done. Everything assembly-wise is done here. The boards are manufactured for us by a fairly large company up in Michigan with what they call pick-and-place machines, and they're these high-speed machines. You've seen films of them that pick up these tiny bits and place them precisely on the circuit board where they're supposed to be. You know?
Yeah, they get soldered in and all that stuff.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep. Very cool technology.
Okay, I have a question, and then I have a story behind this question. So, but first of all, without giving away any secrets, and I'm not asking you to give away the bank here with long range, but what is it about long range receivers and transmitters that make them work so well at distances, so much better than the rest? I mean, look, we've all seen the little trapper girl standing on her tippy toes, pushing the button, trying to get the trap to throw, and you've got recorded throws of up to a half a mile. So what is it that makes, what's the difference in the technology? Can you kind of explain that a little bit?
Okay. the biggest difference is that I believe that we're the only company where our transmitters and receivers send digital signals. So to explain that a little bit, it's the difference between, on your radio, AM and FM. Okay.
Okay.
AM stands for amplitude modulation, and FM stands for frequency modulation. And you know that when you, in the old days, I don't think anybody listens to AM anymore, but you could always pick up a lot of noise on AM, yet the FM signal you would tune to whatever the frequency was, and it would be spot on. It would either be there or it wouldn't be there.
Right.
So being digital, we don't rely on, and now we rely on the frequency, but we send a message to each receiver.
Okay.
And it has the channel number, the frequency, of which we have 256 separate frequencies, and we can operate 15 machines on each frequency. So we actually send a message which is either picked up or not. I mean, obviously, if you get too far away, it won't pick the complete message up. So it picks up the message. It goes, oh, yeah, I'm this frequency. I'm this channel. But I am not trap number two. So it disregards the message then that follows. So, okay, I am on channel whatever. Oh, I am trap two. What's the message? And for argument's sake, a 01 is fire.
Okay.
A 02 could be fire repair. So that's the biggest difference is between analog and digital signals. And we use what's a little processor called an MCU or a microcontroller unit, where we can make things do all sorts of things because they're fully programmable.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the biggest difference, if you like, between, well, between our stuff and some of our competitors' stuff.
Okay. Well, just so everybody understands, and this is where I wanted to tell the little story. Now, Sean, you and I are the only two listening to this that know what I'm talking about. You remember where I had my traps down behind the pond at Mom's farm?
Oh, yeah.
They were literally across the creek. And I was down there practicing, and I got in a golf cart. I went clear up to the house where the garden is. You remember where that was, Sean, back behind the garage?
Yep, now, right next to the garage.
I know for a fact, Sean, that from the backside of the barn to the pond is exactly 100 yards to the edge of the water. So we're talking a good 450 to 500 yards from where I was sitting to the traps. And I had my T8 controller. I was practicing by myself. I had it on voice command. And I set the gun down, and I got in a golf cart, and I ran up to the garden. I was talking to Mom, and I happened to see something out of the corner of my eye. Why, I had forgot to shut the remote off or take it off voice command. And I look over, and I'm seeing a Shondell from up at the house throwing from clear back there behind the pond 450 yards away. And I'm like, yeah, you've got to be kidding me. This thing works out accurate. So I called Scott Manspeaker with Atlas, and I'm raving about this. I'm like, this is awesome. I can't believe it'll throw that far. He said, Jason, we have clubs that we've been driving around with the golf cart and had the remote with us over half a mile throwing targets. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. No. So that's what I want people to understand is the technology difference here. Again, a girl standing on her tippy toes at 60 yards trying to throw a target versus standing a half a mile away and still being able to accurately throw targets. There's a big difference in that technology.
Well, Neil, and along those lines, here's a question I have. So with you being your receivers and transmitters being digital, do factors come into play that can cause interference, like with radio waves? I mean, are there things that can actually affect it, or is it pretty immune to any kind of outsource or outside electronic interference or anything like that?
No, anything that transmits is susceptible to interference.
Okay.
We use 433 megahertz, which is a band that is free to use, so I don't need to license it. We're FCC approved, which means that we meet all the standards. We're EC approved, you know, which is the European standard. Mm-hmm. So that when you press the button, the signal is so quick that it doesn't it's very unlikely to be susceptible to anything else because it's so short. When I talk, and I don't want to get technical, but, you know, 2 to 3 milliseconds to send a signal, that's 2 to 3 thousandths of a second, and it's gone. Some of the other stuff you have, you know, you keep your finger on the button and it continually sends a signal, which could be susceptible to all radio interference. You know, if you've got, oh, I'll tell you a story. This is a good one. It was Nationals 3 years ago, 3 years ago, Yellow Course Station 2. There was a lift out there on the left-hand side of Station 2 on Yellow. And dead on 9 o'clock, I got a call, tower's not throwing. Oh, it's throwing now. No, it's not. Okay. So I took a little gadget out there, and at 9 o'clock, somebody local within the San Antonio area was transmitting on an amateur band with an amplifier, and his signal was so strong, it was overpowering my signal from where the stand was to the tower. Mm. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it was susceptible because the tower was, whatever it was, a 40-foot tower, let's say. So it was up in the air. Now, the beauty of what we can do is I said, okay, I know there's somebody else on that channel. It might have been coming from the fire station on top of the hill at San Antonio at the complex. Quickly fixed, let the tower down, changed to another channel, never had another problem. So, yes, all radios are susceptible to interference. If the signal that they're picking up is stronger than the signal we're sending, that will be interference.
What about physical obstacles, like putting things in between the transmitter and the receiver, like a wall, a group of trees? I mean, how much of that comes into play as far as line of sight?
Several worst-case scenarios. Radio waves are absorbed by moisture. So worst case scenario, if you're up where you are, Sean, and you get a good dew in the morning before the sun comes up or as the sun's coming up and you're transmitting through heavy foliage, you're going to lose some signal because the signal is absorbed by the moisture on the leaves.
Okay.
So typically now it's not that bad, you know, because we can transmit, like Jason said, up to half a mile. So we can lose a fair bit of signal if the machine is only 50 yards away, for example. But it's still something to take into account. Earthen berms, where the berm could be made of old concrete with rebar in it. An earthen berm, typically, it will absorb some of the signal. But we typically don't have any problems with earthen berms unless there's metalwork inside it, you know?
Okay.
So, yes, there's environmental considerations to take into account.
Gotcha.
Sean, you take the next question we got written down here because I already know the answer to it.
Okay, no problem. So real basic here. Obviously, there's a lot of different trap manufacturers out there. Does long range work with all of them?
Yes. I'm going to say it's not true. I've come across one machine that I could not fire. And that was a machine made by Canterbury in New Zealand, and the machine was in Australia. And anybody that knows traps and all the trap manufacturers will understand this, that typically when we fire a machine, we close a contact or press a button that completes the circuit and drives the arm through or pulls the solenoid or whatever it might be. This particular machine made by Canterbury, the same people that make the voice controls for ATA, they reversed everything. So the contact was closed and they opened the contact to fire the machine.
Oh.
So now there obviously was a reason to do that. I don't know what the reason was. So I had to build a little sort of adapter box that kept the relay closed, and then we could operate another little relay that forced the relay to open. So that was the only machine that I couldn't directly wire to without doing something in between. Everything else, whether it be a 110 volt machine or a 240 machine over in Europe in the UK, we can fire any machine. I haven't come across, apart from that one, any machine that we can't release.
Gotcha. Well, Neil, anybody that goes to your website, longrangellc.com, you know, there is just a plethora of different options out there for receivers and transmitters, excuse me. And for the guy that doesn't know, I would hope he would call me. I'd be more than happy to help him. But for the guy that doesn't know, it's like, man, which one do I pick? There's just so many cool receivers and transmitters, excuse me. And for, you know, for a club, there's a lot of different options, whether they wanted to go with individual remotes on each station or they wanted the card readers. Do they want, you know, the ability to have two traps, three traps, four traps per station, the five stand control, the mighty MT4300, as I like to say. You know, for anybody that doesn't know, Anthony uses one. Anybody that's taken a lesson with Anthony knows this. Anthony grabs an MT4300 when he heads out the door to give a lesson, and that's all it takes. He doesn't take a card. He doesn't use the remotes that are on the station. All he does is type the station number in, and he can throw the traps on that station. And he can go to the next station or the five stations down, type in what station number he's on, and he can throw the traps at that station. And they also have those with the card readers on them. So you can go to the five stand with your card. If you go there and want to shoot the five stand, you take that handheld out there, and it's and got voice command built into it. I mean, it's ready to go. How do you recommend, Neil, the people that have called and said, man, which one do I choose? How do I figure this out? Now, I know how to answer this question, but I want you to answer this question. The people that call and say, man, you got all, what do I, how do I figure this out?
And we get that the easiest thing to do is talk to somebody like you, Jason, that knows more or less, you know, what they want, what they, what they're trying to achieve, and what they want at the end of the day. Obviously call the office, and we furnish a lot of calls, and people say, hey, what do I need? I've got three machines. What do I need to, and I, okay, do you want to release them all in one go? Are they separate machines? We go through a list of questions so that we understand what the customer wants. We're continually changing stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're extremely adaptive to what people's requirements are. Example, Homer Hansen out in California, Redlands, they've got a ZZ Bird. Mm-hmm. They've got our card system out there, and I've been working with Homer. The ZZ Bird is controlled by a Progetti controller, mm-hmm. But they wanted to use our cards to buy five ZZ Birds. So we took one of our standard counters and made it adaptable. It now plugs straight into the back of the controller of the Progetti, and you can use one of our cards, press the button, and now the Progetti will launch five targets for you, five ZZs for you on your call.
Yeah.
So that we did that in a matter of weeks, you know. So that's another one now that we can add if anybody else needs or wants to have a coin box replacement for ZZ or bunker. We make coin box replacements for bunker controllers. And of course, and you're absolutely right. We keep some of these on file, as it were, so that we can make them. If anybody comes along and says, I need something that does that, we've already got it.
Yeah.
If we haven't got it, it'll take us about a week to make it. So that's one of our advantages, is to be adaptive to the needs of clubs and shooters themselves.
Yeah. I get a lot of calls from individuals wanting to, they want to buy a couple traps, and they eventually want to end up with their own five stand. And the first thing I ask someone when they call me and they want a couple traps and they want a remote is, what's your end game? And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, let's start with the transmitter. Let's start with the remote. And they're like, okay, why? And I'm like, I don't want to sell you a remote that can control two traps. And then down the road, when you can afford another trap, now we've got to get you a whole nother remote. You know, it's not that much more money. Let's go straight for a T8. I mean, you're only talking 50, 60 bucks difference. Let's go straight for a T8, and you can build into that remote. You know, I've got package deals. We can get all the receivers at once with the remote. Or if you don't want to spend that money, that's fine. But down the road, when you buy another trap, you've got one remote that'll handle up to eight machines. Or if you don't ever want to get eight machines, you only want to end up with six, we can get you a T6, you know? And I tell people this and they're like, wow, nobody's ever explained this to me. And it's like, I don't want to, I'll sell you anything you want. I'll keep selling you anything you want, but I'm trying to make your experience of buying these traps and this and as painless as possible and keep you from having to spend more money down the road. You know, I don't want to see you by the time you get to your eighth trap, you've got four remotes in your hand that you have no use for. So, right. And then the other thing too, that I tell people is the voice command, and Sean saw it himself. He came over to my house. I had the five stand set up there and I was showing him how well it works, even on report pairs. You know, you can designate which two traps you call pull. It throws the first one. It hears the report of the gun. It throws the second one and it will repeatedly do it. You don't have to keep pushing the buttons. You can set it up and it'll repeatedly do it. And it's for training. It is absolutely the best tool in the world because you're there by yourself. There's no distractions. You can focus on what you're trying to do. And I'm telling you, it's been everybody that's bought one of those from me has called me and said, this is the greatest freaking thing ever. You know, I mean, of course they love the Atlas traps, but it's that long range T8 has been, I think there's been so many people that have found the value in that thing. I mean, it's hats off to you, Neil. I'm seriously, and I'm not kissing your butt because you sponsored our program. I was selling the crap out of that thing long before you came onto the program. So, but it's just an invaluable tool for training. If you're buying traps and you're going to practice at home and you're going to compete, it's an invaluable tool to have.
I mean, I agree with you. Of course, a lot of that comes from my experience, obviously having been a shooter, competitive shooter in the past, ground owner, background in electronics with IBM. I mean, it just all came together. So when people phone up and say, I want this to do this, and I'll think about it and go, and believe me, I've said, no, can't do it. You know, example, people have asked me to make a bunker controller. Mm-hmm. Well, yes, I could do that. But Progetti, it's expensive, Alfipa, they're all the standard bunker type controllers, you know. So do I really want to make that? No, not really, because of time and effort. And, you know, how many would you sell? Five?
Yeah. There's not a whole lot of bunkers in the United States.
No. But then somebody comes along. You know, we've got a number of international skeet shooters with the, as you say, the voice, where they can go out and practice with the skeet sequence built in to the transmitter, both for American skeet and international skeet and English skeet, because they're all different. And it will throw around just by calling and pressing the button and calling, you know, what you want.
Sean, that MT4300 I was just talking about there a minute ago that Anthony has, that thing comes with, already has five stand and FeeTask menus in it. And you can,
oh, cool.
You can program it any way you want. You can, you know, for whatever traps you want, but it's already got these menus built into it. And to end the complexity of all of it, Neil has made it to where you just have to hit the trapper girl just has to hit the fire button. It automatically knows the menu. If there's nice. if there's a no bird for some reason, you just hit the no bird button and it restarts the menu for that shooter. And it's foolproof. It really is. And it works incredibly well. But Sean, you were asking earlier, like what other products or services that Long Range offers. You want to ask Neil what you were telling me earlier?
Yeah, well, two things. First of all, Neil, I noticed on your website, you do carry different products for different disciplines. Obviously, you got your trap guys, your skeet guys, your sporting guys, and I'm assuming you've got dedicated controls for each of the disciplines. And is there a reason behind that?
You'll have to explain that question a bit more. I mean, dedicated controls.
So versus like, okay, so you've got equipment for trap, skeet, sporting. Are there things that a sporting guy would need that a trap guy wouldn't need? Like we're talking about clubs or somebody trying to set up a home course or something. Are there devices or equipment that you offer that one discipline wouldn't need over the other?
No, not really. I mean, for example, a trap guy only needs one button.
Right.
Okay. Skeet guy needs three buttons.
Gotcha.
Five stand needs a ton.
So it's just basically a matter of how many machines you want to control then. That's what it breaks down to.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, really, as Jason said, the MT is really an amazing piece of kit. We keep adding games to it. You know, I think we've had, we've had the Matrix. We've had the PSCA sequence on it. And I take them on and off. We've upgraded it. The MT now, believe it or not, and I was looking at it last night, has more memory in it than the Apollo moon lander did on its computer.
Wow.
And correct me, Neil, I forget, is the number 9,999? How many traps will just that one controller control? I forget the number.
4,096.
4,096.
That's impressive.
With one controller.
And we haven't got close to it yet, of course. I think the most we use, obviously, I would think, is at Nationals, where we're up over the 400s on receivers. Of course, you know, an MT's controlling, the five stands. So that's controlling six machines. So, but, you know, 440-odd receivers, all controlled by our transmitters.
All right. And then getting back to Jason's question, or what he brought up with me when we were talking earlier. So are there other products or services that Long Range offers besides just your transmitters and your receivers?
Yeah. I guess really what's taken off in recent years is our counter system. And that's just increased leaps and bounds. I think we must have saved gun clubs thousands upon thousands of dollars because they're getting paid now for the targets that are being thrown. So we've consistently developed that. So we have counters for sporting clays, counters for trap, skeet, and as we mentioned, bunker, ZZ Bird, that just continually, you know, you have to have a card. You either have to have targets on it or a cash value on it to throw the targets. That's grown now so that we now have a self-serve kiosk. That's really popular at the moment. We've just updated that so that that's now what they call PCI compliant, which means that your credit card data is secure. They guarantee the security of it. So now you don't need to go to the front desk or take up somebody's time. You can go to a kiosk and place your card on the reader. It knows who you are. I want to add 100 targets or $100. Make the transaction, swipe your credit card or tap it on the top, and the transaction is done. Targets are loaded. You can go out and shoot. So that's really taken off. That's sort of taken the, that's helped the range owner and the clubs become more proficient, I guess, you know, at keeping their club members happy. You know, they're not waiting in line. The kiosk itself, now we can get the customers to sign a waiver on the kiosk. So that's another thing that they don't have to do. The waiver is then stored digitally. So the whole system is becoming more efficient. You know, the next thing that I'm looking at currently is including a point of sale system. We've never had the ability to buy 100 targets and four boxes of shells and then put it on the same credit card transaction. If you follow me, it's always been two separate entities. You know, you'll use Target Tag to buy the cards, and then you'll go to the pro shop and buy four boxes of shells. So what I'm looking at now is to include a point of sale within Target Tag so that you can buy a new hat, Jason, and, you know, four boxes of shells and 100 targets and have one transaction, and the receipt will be emailed to you or printed off, whichever you want. So that's exciting. That's coming along. That's just sort of proof of concept at the moment. Later in the year, if we decide to go that route, you know, that will be an add-on to the current system.
Yeah, that kiosk system's pretty slick. They have one down there at Abilene Clay Sports, Sean, there in Texas. And that thing's just slick as can be. You walk up to it, like Neil said, you put your card down, your target card, and it automatically knows who you are, and you swipe your credit card and type in how many targets you want to buy, and you're ready to go. You don't have to go to the counter. You don't have to go stand in line. It works very well. It's a neat system for sure.
Very cool.
Neil, one of the things people don't know about you, but you help design clubs, kind of along the lines of what I do. You and I have talked about working together a bunch, but that's one of the things you do aside from long range. You got to tell us about that, Neil?
Oh, that was a question, was it?
Yes. Yeah. He's looking at me like, okay, so?
you just stopped mid-track there.
I'm trying to advertise your services. Work with me here, Neil.
Yes, I do, and I don't do as much now as I used to, but probably 4 or 5 a year where people are either adding to their existing course, it's a new course, wanting some change. You know, we always talk about if you're going to be successful at sporting clays, you need to be able to change your courses up and down, adding new areas. I've got one up in Vermont that's going in on a small skeet club, and they want me to go up there and tell them which trees to cut down. But because and I always tell people, okay, if you think you're going to cut down those trees, cut down twice as many.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise you're going to end up with these little alleyways where you cannot throw a cross in targets, either incoming or outgoing or a variation thereof. So within the next couple of weeks, I'll take a drive up there and mark some trees and hopefully give them some ideas as to how to make a good sporting clays course. So, yeah, it doesn't keep me that busy. You know, fortunately now with a lot of the new technologies like Google Earth and Google and Maps and stuff like that, if I know where the area is, of course, it doesn't tell me sort of the topography of the ground, but I can certainly measure distances for shot full, 300 yards. Are we going to drop shot off the edge of the property? Is whatever it might be. Are there any houses close by? So that's always a good start.
Yeah, and then in your free time, you're also a member of the executive council, right? So you don't have anything else to do. So, but no, Neil, we love having you on. We always get a big response every time you're on. So I wanted to give you, I know you, everybody, Neil was very bashful about this, did not want to come on and talk about himself in long range, but I think it needs to be done. Look, I mean, Sean's seen your products firsthand when he's come over to the house with me and shot and, just, John, you were thoroughly impressed.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, looking at some of the other stuff that I'm familiar with, in my untrained eyes, it's leaps and bounds better than anything I've played with other than that. So,
and now, Neil, that's a good compliment because this is coming from the most oblivious guy on the course. So, you know,
well, you know, we've come a long way, and it's not all me. It's and everybody that's got the long range stuff has probably spoken to Jeremy, you know, or one of the other staff here, and they're, in my eyes, some of the best customer support people in the business. You know, we've got 3 lines that come into the building, and quite often, you know, somebody's going to get a busy signal because I've got 3 guys on the phone talking to customers.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've got to give a shout out to the guys here, and especially Jeremy, that sort of he runs the business really when I'm not here, and sometimes he does when I am here. So,
yeah.
But
Jeremy's awesome to work with. I mean, I had a problem one time with a receiver. And I sent it back, and I mean, he had me a new one within a couple of days. I mean, it was fast.
Yeah. And customer service is the key to any business, in my opinion. Yeah. You know, and, you know, 4:30 today, Jeremy was on the phone with a guy, and he'd obviously been run over by a tractor or lawnmower, whatever it was, because it was in pieces. And the guy went, no, never happened. Didn't happen here. And Jeremy gave in the end and went, okay, we'll warranty it. Now, I don't want to get out because I don't want everybody to try that.
Yeah, but, right.
But you know, we're not going to argue with him if he wants it done under warranty. And there's times when we'll say no, it's not covered by warranty, of course, you know. But we try to make everybody happy and get along with everybody.
Spontaneous decomposition is not covered under warranty. I mean, come on,
right?
Yeah, no, Sean. I even had a customer call me. It was 2 years ago, and he wanted to put in a make or break there on his property. And you know, Neil was able to. You know, Neil and I talked, and he's like, "Yeah, no problem. I can set up the MT to throw a make or break." So, you know, it wouldn't have been complicated just to use a T8. You know, but Neil's like, "Yeah, I can make it happen." So it's things like that, that it's just nice to be able to work with someone that's willing to build something to suit your specific needs. You know, it's not just whatever I got on the shelf, so I'm going to give you, you know, I mean, they go out of their way to help. So that means a lot, Neil. We appreciate you, yeah, buddy.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Sean Alley, we've been at this a hot minute. We better get running here. I think we covered everything we talked. Oh, the gun raffle. Kids, yes, and Clays is putting that together. Probably by the time you're hearing this, hopefully we'll have something pictures wise out for you. And the raffle should be live by the time you're hearing this.
Yes. All hopes and dreams. That's definitely what's should be happening at this time. So we're just working out a few details right now, guys. Be patient.
Yes. And also there are two contests. Again, by the time you're hearing this, they'll be up on our Facebook Live. There's pictures, two separate pictures of buckets of shells. One is for the Ranger glasses giveaway, and one is for we're not starting that one yet for the NSCA. Michael Hampton was going to give away another membership. So, but yeah, anyway, be looking for those contests over on our Facebook public group page. Again, like Sean said earlier, we hope you'll join us on the 18th over on our YouTube channel for our Scoops Live episode we're going to do for show 200. If you can't make it, send us those questions. Be more than happy to get them answered. As long as Sean's wife or my wife's not listening, we'll probably answer them. Sean Alley, every week we harp it. Tell them our message, buddy.
Hey, get somebody out there on the range. Introduce somebody that's not seen this sport. Put a gun in their hand. Get them out there on the course. Take some time to help grow the sport. Watch the smile when they break their first clay, and you know you've done a good job. That's all we ask.
Yeah, and if they're already a recreational shooter, Sean Alley, what would they teach them then?
You can just push them a little bit into maybe the registered competition side of the sport, is highly addictive and highly fun.
Absolutely. And remember, it's free to join the NSCA for your first year. So get signed up at the NSCA, check out all the information that they put out every month, plus their email. I mean, heck, their email chains, they're sending out emails twice a week. So, yes, you know, and there's a lot of good information there, where to find shoots, instructors, all kinds of good stuff. So get them signed up at the NSCA, take them to a tournament, take them out shooting, show them why we love this sport so much. Neil, thank you, sir, very much for joining us. We appreciate your time. Sean Alley, until next week, my friend.
Can't wait to see y'all back here on the Dead Pair Podcast.
I just want to add this.
Yeah.
I just want to say, guys, that I appreciate what you two do. And I know that there's many people in the industry and shooters alike that appreciate what you do. Thank you, both of you, very much.
Well, thank you, Neil. We sincerely appreciate that.
Absolutely. We appreciate that very much. Sean Alley, okay, one more time.
I said it the first time. We'll see y'all back here. You know the rigmarole.
All right, man. We'll see y'all.
We'll see you next time on the Dead Pair Podcast.
The Dead Pair.
The Dead Pair Podcast is brought to you by Kohler Arms, the mark of performance, and is fueled by Fiocchi USA. Special thanks to the following sponsors: Atlas Traps, Ranger Performance Eyewear, Rhino Chokes, Long Range LLC, Taconic Distillery, Score Chaser, and Clay Range Design Works.